From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there, and now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
And a very good afternoon to you. I'm Kate Turkington. It's June. My word, it's nearly the end of June. How can the time be going by so quickly? And it's not just when you're older. I was talking to one of my young grandchildren the other day, aged 11. He said, you know, Granny, this year has gone so quickly. I thought, my word, if you're saying that at 11, what are you going to do when you get to my ancient status? Anyway, a very good afternoon to you. It's 101.9. It's Kate Turkington, Travels with Kate. And this week, I'm going to take you to an island in the Indian Ocean. Okay, maybe you've been to Mauritius, maybe you've been to Reunion, maybe you've been to the Seychelles, but I wonder if you've been to perhaps my favorite, the biggest island. In fact, it's the fourth biggest island in the world. Do you know what I'm talking about? It's Madagascar. Certainly, if you've children, you probably know quite a lot about Madagascar, because do you remember a few years ago, the kids' favorite movie was Madagascar. I think I must have watched it three or four times. But anyway, it's actually the fourth largest island in the world. And now you're thinking, what are the other three? I'll tell you. Borneo, Greenland, and New Guinea. And it has an absolutely amazing, can't think of a better word, diversity of landscapes. You can go from desert to jungle. You can go from rocky mountains to wonderful baobab forests. Plus, now this really is, I use the word amazing in its full sense here, it has a staggering statistic, Madagascar. Okay, you can quote this, you can dine out on this statistic. 80% of the flora and fauna on Madagascar exists nowhere else on Earth. Think about that. 80% of the flora and fauna on Madagascar exists nowhere else on Earth. Okay, just let me tell you quickly how this happened. Well, you probably know. Once upon a time, when the world was new, that we had the mega continent of Gondwana, and you know, that covered practically the whole of the southern hemisphere. Then about 160 million years ago, Gondwana broke apart, and Africa went one way, and India went the other, and it left one huge chunk of itself orphaned in the middle of the Indian Ocean, and that's Madagascar. It really is a living laboratory of eco-diversity, and it's unchanged for millions and millions and millions of years. I mean, I think people, explorers, scientists, naturalists, they spent years discovering it. But if you want to meet some really exotic creatures, and if you want to see some amazing landscapes, then Madagascar. It's got all the Indian Ocean stuff. It's got the golden, unspoiled beaches. It's got the friendly people, wonderful local food. It's got world-class scuba diving, snorkeling, adventure activities. It's got everything else. But I want you to go, if you go, to the island of Nosy Bay. That's two words, Nosy, as in Nosy. Bay is just B-E, not B-A-Y, Nosy Bay. And that's off Madagascar's northwest coast. It is actually Madagascar's number one beach destination, but there's lots of other reasons to go too. When you get there, you do what the locals say, mora, mora, slowly, slowly, Maura, Maura, slow down. Get away from the stress. Get away from all the bad stuff. Maura, Maura. Of course, it was once a French colony. But, I mean, today you've got, it's an absolute melting pot. You've got Asians, Europeans, Chinese, India cultures, and that's why the food is so good, because it mixes all these wonderful cultures. And perhaps because the French influence is the strongest, think freshly baked baguettes, wonderful coffee, soup, seafood, mouth-watering desserts. So I'm going to tell you more about Nosy Bay in just a moment.
From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there, and now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. It's 101.9 High FM. It's Travels with Kate. It's Sunday, and I'm talking to you about Madagascar. I've only had the one visit, but I would love to go back at some time. A very good base for your stay. There's a very comfortable and elegant and affordable hotel called the Vanilla Hotel and Spa. It's right on the beach, and it's sort of, I don't know, it's got a kind of laid-back Madagascan charm with a kind of French chic, if you can imagine that. Nice, big, airy, spacious, comfortable rooms. They've all got private verandas overlooking the sea and all sorts of things. Beautiful pools, a spa, fresh juice on tap, cocktails, lush, lush gardens, beautiful, beautiful gardens. So a really nice place and very child friendly. Too. And a very, very good little craft shop. You know, sometimes hotels have these dreadful, dreadful, shops where they're peddling, tat. Absolute trash sometimes. This one has a wonderful display of the local, Madagascar crafts. I'm trying to think what the adjective is. Is it Magalesian? Not quite sure. Somebody will have to put me right. But anyway, lots of local arts and crafts, nice ones, not tap, not tourist tap rubbish at all. But drag yourself away from the sea and all the lovely things you can do. You've got to take yourself to see the lemurs. Now, I got picked up, I had a guy called Claudio, and he would told me we were going to a nearby reserve called Lemuria Land. Oh, my word, my heart sank. I thought, oh, this is going to be one of those dreadful, dreadful tourist traps. You know, we've all been there. We've all been lured into them all over the world at some stage or other. Oh, I couldn't have been more wrong. It's called Lemuria Land. It's a reserve. It's set among beautiful, beautiful indigenous bush, indigenous scenery. And it's got free-ranging lemurs there of all kinds. It's also got chameleons and crocodiles, wonderful, wonderful birds. Can you believe I'm a birder, as some of you know? There was a flock of white-faced whistling ducks on the lagoon there, which one of my favourite birds, I may say, which you can see in South Africa, but there they were. And this reserve is set in the middle of a centuries-old ilang-ilang plantation. Have you ever heard of ilang ilang? Again, let me spell it for you. Once a teacher, always a teacher. Y-L-A-N-G hyphen Y-L-A-N-G. And they're old, think of old, gnarled, twisted trees. They're not high. They're not often more than a couple of people high, but they've got these gnarled, ancient roots. But of course, what makes them so special is they have these frangipani-like flowers, and these are made into very expensive essential oils. If you were to try and buy Ylang Ylang oil in South Africa, you'd have to have very deep pockets. There, you can buy it on the plantation, and there the ladies are picking the flowers and filling the sacks, and they take them to sell in their, well, to say factory, it's a bit of a misnomer. It's a kind of very ancient, just a couple of rooms where they're pressing the flowers and getting the oil out. But be sure to get some stage in your life, if there's a birthday or a celebration coming up, if you're a lady, ask for some Ylang Ylang oil. It's absolutely gorgeous. But anyway, you've actually come to Lemuria Land for the lemurs. So in I go. Suddenly, little silky paws were stroking my cheek, and there was a little wet nose burrowing into my neck, and two little bright eyes made contact with mine. I couldn't believe it. A critically endangered black and white ruffled lemur. Look it up, Google it, find a picture of it. A black and white ruffled lemur had chosen to sit on my shoulder. And she turned to one side, and she had, there was a little mini mother sitting on her back. She had a little baby on her back. Oh, it was just a life-changing moment. There are 8 species of different kinds of lemur in the reserve, all free-ranging, all swinging about among the trees and generally enjoying themselves. And if you can tear yourself away, they are, along with my pangolin that I saw earlier this year, I think these are the most enchanting creatures I've ever seen. If you can tear yourself away from them, you've got something called a panther chameleon, which has got sort of eyes that roll around. It looks like something out of Disney Channel. And as I said, there was my face, whistling ducks, giant Seychelles tortoises. Oh, my word. Claudio, my guide, reminded me that lemurs are the world's most endangered animals. 90% of them are threatened in the wild. 90% of them. Maybe in your lifetime, 90% of those lemurs are going to become extinct. So that's another good reason for going to Madagascar. If you want to do it in a more, I won't say rough and tumble way, but if you want to hike into the natural forest, you'd need a guide and put your hiking boots on. Then there's a lovely nature reserve. It's called the Lacombo Nature Reserve. It's actually accessible only by sea. You can access it from Nosy Bay. And again, there are more Ylang Ylang and vanilla plantations, but there's waterfalls, there's hiking, there's quad bike trails. You can also paddle your own canoe. You can get help. You can get somebody to paddle it for you if you want. And then what you do, you hike through dense primary forest. This is really primary forest, people. It's not manicured at all. So if that's what you want to do, you can go hiking and you will see the lemurs. They're quite undisturbed by hikers and visitors. I suppose habituated, like many of the animals in some of our private game reserves. Not tame, no wild animal is ever tame, but habituated. They are used to people. And then if you really have deep pockets and want to spoil yourself, then go to the Constance Resort on the island of Sarabandjina. Sarabandjina is just an hour's speedboat ride away from Nosy Bay. I mean, it's barefoot Robinson Crusoe style, but deluxe. I mean, you have a little cabin on the beach, you have amazing food, you have exclusivity, beautiful birds. One day I took a boat out and we went bird watching, and there are three huge, like monolithic rocks. I think they were made of basalt, rising up out of the ocean depths, really. They had caves and overhangs, and there were colonies of brown boobies and gannets and tropic birds and frigate birds. And on one of the rocks, could you believe, we spotted a resident barn owl way out to sea on these rocks. I suppose it had a ready supply of nestlings. One lazy tropical afternoon at Sarabangina, they have a resident marine biologist, and she, it was a she at the time, saves baby hawksbill turtles when they hatch. Not going against nature, but just a few. She saves from the nest those who get left behind in the nest, and she keeps them in a bath or a bathtub until they're about the size, they're about the size of the palm of my hand. It was about 2 to 3 months old. She gave me a little one, and she said, go and put it back in the sea. And I'd seen turtles hatching, and I'd watched the giant leatherback lay her eggs in Cozy Bay. These were hawksbill turtles, and she put this little turtle in my hand. He was about the size of the palm of my hand. I took him down to the sea, and he kept swimming back, kept coming back to land. I'm saying, no, 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 go to the sea. And finally, there was an Italian guy who was surfing nearby, and he saw me trying to talk this little turtle into becoming ocean bound, and he said, I'll take it. And he took it, and he went quite far out to sea, and he put that little turtle back in the sea. So somewhere, swimming the deep oceans of the world, I hope my little turtle has grown and is now a big turtle and doing very nicely. Thank you.
From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there. And now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
101.9 High FM. And Kate Turkington, and we're going to be talking now about something so many of us are interested in, cruising. People either love it or hate it, or maybe you haven't even tried it yet, so you don't know. So joining me now to talk about cruising, and it's an enormous subject because you can go almost anywhere in the world now, is Marco Cristofoli. And Marco is CEO of Cruises International. So, Marco, thanks so much for joining us. First of all, let's talk about your company. I mean, now travel restrictions have been lifted, after a long time. Tell us about your destinations and the company.
Sure. Thanks, Kate. So firstly, thank you to you and to your listeners, and thank you for having me on your station. It's really a privilege. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
So a little bit about Cruises International. So we've been around, so we were founded almost 30 plus years ago. And we were kind of one of the first companies that were general sales agents we were the general sales agent just for Royal Caribbean at that point in time. And then over the years, we grew the portfolio to essentially cover 8 of the best in class cruise liners. So essentially what we do is we are a general sales agent for 8 cruise liners, and I'll tell you who they are. Mm-hmm. As I said, we've been around for about 30 years. So our main focus is really to sell to the travel agents.
Yes.
And essentially we look after them. They would come to us typically, and obviously we would then assist them with whichever cruise line they were keen on booking.
Yeah.
So again, it's as you said. So past the pandemic, I mean, probably we were the first sort of leisure call it brand that switched off almost simultaneously, immediately almost. If I think back to 2020, I think it was March when the pandemic hit. And cruising, I mean, got a bad rap. I remember in the day, I think it was one of Japan. I think it was in Japan. I can't remember which one it was now. Princess
Yeah, Putin I remember. Yes.
Yeah. So it was. So we got a really bad rap, and for 2 years, essentially, we did nothing other than pay out refunds. And so that's what we did. And I think that, you know, what stood us in good stead, I think, is that because of our reputation in the business, I think we looked after all the customers and we paid all the refunds that that people obviously couldn't travel. Yeah. So we did what we needed to do. And I think 2 years later, I'm not saying we are basically where we were in 2019, but I would estimate we're about 60%
getting there. Yeah.
It's been an amazing journey. But as you rightly said, the market has opened up completely. All the restrictions are gone. So, fortunately, when people travel now, they just, there's no testing, there's none of those things on board the ships. It's basically normal as it was before.
Now, you mentioned, sorry, just come in here. You mentioned you have a portfolio of 8 best in their class brands. Yes. How do you judge that? And what are they?
Okay, so firstly, I'll tell you what they are. So essentially we cater for all people essentially. So from a budget and lifestyle perspective, and from a leisure and corporate perspective. Obviously, when I say corporate, we do a lot of charters. We also do a lot of incentives and a lot of groups as well. And then of course we've got from the family friendly right through to the super, super luxury. So the brands that we represent, so our biggest brand, of course, is Royal Caribbean, which most people would be familiar with. Then we also represent Celebrity Cruises. Yes. We do Azamara, which again is really kind of an upmarket, product. Oceania, amazing product. Seabourn, Emma Waterways, which is your river cruising, Windstar, and Sea Dream Yacht Club. So essentially we've got it's everything from the Royal 9,000 passengers. In fact, there's a launch happening now with Icon of the Seas, which I think will have 9,500 passengers. And again, that's a product that caters primarily for families. It's fun, it's vibey, it's essentially a city on water, that caters, slides and all sorts of things. And then on the opposite end of the scale, you've got your Sea Dreams, which is probably 100 passengers, like a huge sailing boat for argument's sake.
Yeah.
It's a destination ship essentially. And then in between, you've got everything from, 2,000 passengers to 600 passengers, 3,000 passengers. So it really is, it caters for everybody essentially.
So people really do have an enormous choice. I was going to ask you, what's the size of your ships? Are they all huge? But obviously they're not.
No. So as I said to you, you've got the big ones, 9,000 people, right through to 100 people, and in between. I mean, the most popular, if you look at the Med, for example, I mean, it's saturated with hundreds of cruise liners.
Absolutely.
But essentially, the most popular ones, you'll always find roughly in the 2,000 to 3,000 passengers. And those are quite nice because what they do is they can get into the, let's call it the not the mainstream ports, the smaller ports.
Yes.
And the important thing is the smaller ports are nice because typically what happens is when you get off the ship in the port, typically the towns are kind of almost walking distance from the ship, which is always a nice thing. So you don't have to get onto a 40-minute bus ride into the nearest city, whereas the bigger cruise line typically have that problem because obviously they're in the mainstream ports where the towns are a little bit further, so you've got to get into a bus, et cetera, et cetera.
And then also so you're in a great big excursion group of about 40, 50 people with one guide sort of shouting, trying to get everybody
to
absolutely,
in with a lollipop. Absolutely.
Yes, a yellow umbrella.
Exactly,
whereas the smaller ones, I always say to friends and families cruising, if you are on a a big ship, or when you get to port, forget the excursions. I mean, this is probably contrary to your advice, but I always say forget the excursions, team up with a couple of buddies, find a taxi driver, say, here's $300, where can you take us for that? And my word, you get a fantastic trip. That's a Turkington travel tip. Now, yep. These big ships, you know, before we go on to all the good things about cruising, you know, people grumble that there's too many people when it's meal times and you've got limited times in ports and you know all the grumbles you have about so many passengers. But obviously the people who choose those big ships don't mind this.
No, and Kate, you know what happens now? I think these ships, they've become so refined and so clever in how they do things. So you'll find, like, on even on the big ships where, you know, they've got 4,000 or 5,000 people, you typically don't queue for anything. So firstly, there's you know, some of these ships have 20 plus restaurants on board, and even the big dining rooms, you know, are really huge. And they do have specific times. Obviously, if you want to eat in the main dining room, they'll typically have two sittings or more. And essentially what happens is, so you never wait for to be seated or to have food. And as I said to you, there's 20 plus restaurants. There's plenty of bars.
Yes.
So you don't, you know, the days of when you used to queue and,
to the
bar to get a drink. Absolutely. Absolutely. So those days are gone. It's really, what's interesting, and I'm sure most of your learned listeners would have experienced this. When you get on these big ships, you're not on top of each other. Although there's so many people, you don't feel there's so many people. You know, it's quite amazing actually. They've really got it down to a fine art.
So the logistics, the actual logistics must be incredible, how they work out moving all these people around and
it's
making
incredible.
Sure things don't overlap, etc.
Absolutely.
Now, what about let's talk about some of the good things. I think the best thing about cruising, I've done several cruises, and I'm one of these people. I love the 100-passenger, the very small ships, or the river cruising or whatever. But for me, and I think for many people, the great thing is not having to pack and unpack, that you're actually, you've got one fixed abode.
Yep.
That, I think, is an enormous plus these days, especially if you've got kids.
Yeah, I agree. So for me, I always say to everybody that the best thing about cruising is the convenience. Unpack and pack just once.
Yes.
You visit the destination each day. I mean, say if you're on a 7 or 12 day cruise, literally every day you're in a different destination, a different country. It's freaking amazing. You know, ease of planning, it's safe, it's secure.
Yes.
All your meals, all your entertainment, and all your activities are included, especially with some of the more luxury brands, where they offer the all-inclusive options. I mean, you just can't beat it.
I want to come in here, because that all-inclusive option is so important, because how many of us over the years have taken children to resorts or gone wherever, and then we find that every coat costs like $5 now, and your costs go through the roof because you haven't budgeted for this kind of thing. So I think those all-inclusive ones, particularly if you've got a family or if you're on a very tight budget, they're really the way to go.
100%. And Kate, and if I may add, especially with the exchange rate that we face.
Yes.
I mean, our country is so volatile. I mean, it's, you know, it becomes problematic. So, you know, so the beauty is, at least, you know, if you have an all-inclusive package, you know what you've paid for it.
Exactly.
And that's it. You're all in. You know, the only spending money you need is for, you know, I don't know, your souvenirs or whatever you want to do. But at least from a ship perspective, well, it's all included. So, I mean, there's no question that it makes absolute sense.
Now,
and I must say,
Marco, given just Given the sort of ongoing global situation, which is pretty dire, as we know, how have cruises adapted to ensure the safety and well-being of the passengers and the crew, of course?
Yes. So I think COVID had a big part in that. So essentially, you know, since COVID, I mean, most ships have adopted new sort of airflow. I can't even remember the word now, but it's, you know, so how the air flows, the filters, you know, all those things have just, I mean, they're just amazing. So from that perspective, you know, they're 100% light years ahead of where they were pre-COVID. And then, of course, what they've also done is, in terms of the buffets and all those good things, there's, you know, so before, I think, you know, people could just kind of, you know, walk up to the buffet and they could just help themselves. And there was very little, you know, attention to hygiene.
Yeah.
Now what they do is they still have the buffets. I mean, they're still fantastic. The only difference is that you can't just, you know, go there and serve yourself. So they'll have somebody behind, you know, the counter that will obviously, that will serve you.
That makes such sense, doesn't it?
It does. It's much more hygienic, much more hygienic. So you see, it's those little things that obviously have improved. From a health and safety perspective. And also what you'll typically find now is, you know, we were talking early on about the logistics and how they move so many people around. You know, when you board a ship, no matter big or small, the processes are so obviously taking COVID into mind. So there's no queue. So it will typically take, you know, normally you'd wait 2-3 hours or 4 hours even before you could board a ship, you know, going through all the processes and the checks and whatever. Now, I mean, I just came off a cruise on Oceania a couple of weeks back, but from the time I got to the port to the time I was on the ship, I think the whole process took me 20 minutes.
That's a huge difference.
So it makes a huge difference. And you know, the way they do it is because before you even board the ship, at the time of booking, they will ask. So there's things that you fill in on the app or on your computer, whatever the case may be. And you get allocated a check-in time.
Yeah.
So you choose your check-in time. Once you've chosen the check-in time, by the time you get there, you'll get, you know, there's special lines with the times. You'll go into the specific queue that you've chosen. And it's pretty seamless. So I promise you, it takes, at worst, you know, within an hour, you're on the ship. They've really refined it.
So, in fact, COVID, even though it was so awful, it's actually done quite a lot of good things.
It has. It has. I think these are the positives from COVID, 100%.
Now, Mark, I'm talking to Marco Cristofoli. He's the CEO of Cruises International. Marco, let's talk about sustainability, because you know how many people now are concerned, have environmental concerns. You know, they become more and more important. These lines you deal with, these shipping lines, are you aware that they're working perhaps towards a more sustainable kind of future?
Well, undoubtedly. So all the brands that we represent, and starting with the biggest, which is Royal, are all obviously on a sustainable trajectory. So they're all going green, and it's going to start. They've already started the process. I think so. By the end of, I think the end of 2024, 25. So the fuel that they currently use it's going to be biodiversity fuel.
Yeah.
So that you know, so those things are happening as we speak. Obviously, what is happening is the newer ships that are coming out. So the new builds. So for instance, on Royal, you've got the Icon of the Seas coming out. So those ships already are coming out with the new fuel efficiencies and biodiversity fuels, as opposed to the, you know, the traditional diesel that
that's interesting, because I think that may well influence people's choices, particularly younger people.
Yeah, absolutely, and there's no doubt that all the new builds are coming out with obviously the new sustainability targets in mind. The older ships, and I say, you know, the older ships, maybe the 5, 6, 7 year old ships, As the new ones are built, then they'll go in and they'll be refurbished with the new technology. Because again, that's a UN, I think it's a UN target that by 2050, I think it is. I can't remember the exact date now, where all cruise lines need to adhere to a certain sustainability target that they have to reach.
Excellent.
So the process has started. There's no doubt. As I say, all the new ships are coming out. Ours are definitely coming out with the new biodiversity.
And Marco, the most popular destination still the Med.
The Med. I think the Med for South Africans is still the best. It's the most. It's easiest to get to.
Bit more affordable.
Yes, because remember, it's popular. The Med is popular. A, because for South Africans, a lot of them have family in Europe.
Yes.
So most of them will go on a cruise and then meet up with family in Europe, and they'll do a cruise together, or they'll do a pre and post cruise, you know, so couple of days pre, spend with family, post. So Europe is always popular. So definitely, at least from a cruises perspective, cruises international perspective, it's probably about 60% of our business goes through to the Med. The other popular destination, of course, is the Caribbean.
Yes.
So of course, you know, because the Med season really is from about April, well, May, June, July, August, September, kind of
summer.
The Med.
Yes.
Summer, and then of course, then from November onwards, you're looking at the Caribbean.
Yeah.
The problem with the Caribbean is it's just a bit more expensive to get there for South Africans. It's far.
Yes.
And of course it's the airfares and all those things become a factor. And then of course, what's opened up now, which is very exciting again, is the Far East. So Singapore, Thailand, and that is also very popular for South Africans because again, it's a lot cheaper to get there, but you don't need visas, which, from a South African perspective, makes a huge, huge difference.
Yes. And then so when you get there, gorgeous food and charming people and also, not so pushy as some, that's, I shouldn't probably say, that's just my experience.
Yes.
Not so pushy as some of the people who live in ports in the Med. I mean, they're so charming, the Vietnamese, the people in Cambodia, Singaporeans, they're so charming. Do you do cruises to Japan?
We do indeed. In fact, we've got a nice one that's going out in April next year. On Oceania, it does the I think it's the orchards or something, the blossom.
The cherry blossom, probably.
There we go. Thank you. I went blank for a minute, but yes.
Yeah.
So it's fantastic, and it's a wonderful trip. I think it's a 12-day, and it touches on Japan, at Singapore. So it does that whole kind of, that whole area. Yeah.
Because I think, and I'm generalizing, obviously, as South Africans, we're not searching for the sun. You know, we're not like people in Northern Europe who all they want is to get some sunshine. I think, you know, very often we're interested in the destinations and the culture.
Yeah.
It's not just sunshine and booze or whatever. It really is. History and culture, and your own personal favorite. Have you got one?
Yes. So you know what I actually do. So I did not so long ago. I did a North Europe. As you said, we're always chasing the sun and we're always doing the Med. But it was so nice to do the North, sort of Northern Europe. So going to places like Denmark and Sweden.
Yeah.
Then we did places, places I'd never even dreamt of going to, like Estonia.
That's amazing.
It was incredible. I mean, you know, just the cultures, the people you meet.
Yes.
And fabulous country that you would never dream of going to. I mean, that was for me amazing.
I think too, perhaps again generalizing, the people who choose to go on that kind of trip are probably, you're going to have a lot more, you know that you're going to be with people you probably have a lot in common with.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, you'll find typically, depending on the destination, but you'll typically find on cruises essentially going, you know, let's say call it Northern Europe that I've just explained.
Yeah.
You know, the demographics you'll find are people sort of, you know, the average age probably about 55 or 60. So, you know, discerning different, you know, different group of people.
Of course,
if you're going in a royal to the Caribbean, I don't know, and you're doing, you know, Cocoa Bay and these fancy places, you know, then obviously it's a lot of youngsters and teenagers and, you know, young families. So it just depends what you want, you know. But
exactly.
As I said, we really do nice trips. In fact, maybe, you know, interesting for your listeners, we also do a nice, with Royal Caribbean specifically, we do on Rhapsody of the Seas, we do a sailing out of Haifa.
So
the ship does, so we do, and it goes from Haifa to Cyprus. I think it's a 4 or 5 day cruise. Very, very popular. And of course, what's nice is it's kosher dining.
That's interesting.
You know, they have a rabbi on board.
What's the best, contact to go to? Is it cruisesinternational.co.za.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's the best. Or otherwise, if your listeners have a specific travel agent they deal with, they're more than welcome to go through the travel agent, and the travel agent obviously will advise them or come through to us.
Okay. Oh, well, it's been great talking to you. My word, what a plethora of destinations, and so good to hear, too, about the wellness aspect and the clean air and the sustainability. That's one good thing that came out of COVID.
Absolutely.
Anyway, thanks a million. Thanks a million, Marco. And address, contact, cruisesinternational.co.za.
From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there, and now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, Sundays at 12 midday, only on 101.9 High FM.
Time now on Travels with Kate to talk about books. There are so many good books out there at the moment, fiction, non-fiction. I've said to you before, I'm very lucky. I read very quickly. It's not a skill you learn. It's something, I think it's a hereditary gene, because two of my 4 children and some of the grandchildren also have it. I mean, it's a great thing to have, because I can read a book in the night. But on the other hand, if you have a Kindle and you suddenly find an author you like and you want to go to the backlist, before you know what you've done, you've run up a few hundred rand just getting the backlist on your Kindle. And I use my Kindle when I'm traveling, because obviously I can't cart a whole bunch of books around with me. And I mean, it is useful and I do enjoy it, but nothing ever will take away the sensual pleasure of actually having a book in your hands and turning the pages and just having it there as a companion. I've two brilliant, and I use the term advisedly, I'm not throwing that word around haphazardly, fiction books to talk about this week. The one is called The Ghost Theatre by Matt Osman. The Ghost Theatre by Matt Osman. And let me tell you, it's only June 2023. It's already been chosen by The Observer, The Times, The Evening Standard in UK as one of their books of the year. So, I mean, only June, and it's already made that books of the year list. Beautifully written, totally convincing. It will transport you to another world. Now, let me tell you what it's about. Don't be put off. Don't be put off. Because after the first few pages, you won't be able to put it down. And in fact, when I finished it, I sat all alone in my cottage, like for 20 minutes, quite silent and transported. can't think of another word. I was in another world. I couldn't get out of this world. What is this world? Can you believe it? It's the underworld of Elizabethan England. I'm talking Elizabeth the First. I'm talking the England of Walter Raleigh and Francis Drake. The underworld of Elizabethan London. And you're thinking, no, wait, am I ever going to read a book about the Elizabethan underworld? Oh, on the contrary, you may be thinking I would like to read it. It's called The Ghost Theatre. So it's about a small group of young people who form a little theatre company of their own called the Ghost Theatre. They're not acting in Shakespeare's Globe Theatre. They're not acting in the several London theatres of the day. They're travelling the countryside, acting in villages, acting in little towns, sometimes acting in a farmhouse. And it's a story of hope, of beauty, of wonder. It will transport you. It really will. And of tragedy too. And I think it not only shows the power of theatre, but it also shows you the power of a book when it totally enthralls you. That's the word I want to use. I gave it to my youngest daughter, who's a voracious reader like me. Well, they all are, but she reads very quickly. That's why I gave it to her, so I can get it back and pass it on to friends. And she's read about 5 pages at the moment because for all sorts of reasons. She said, Mum, I can't wait to get back to it. So I haven't told you too much about it, but try it. The Ghost Theatre by Matt Osman. And for something totally, completely different, with the most amazing cover, a book called Yellowface, also fiction, by Rebecca F. Quang. That's K-U-A-N-G. Rebecca F. Quang. What I'll actually do is I'll put these titles up on Facebook, and I also put them up on the website, highfm.com. And it's an amazing story. There's a young woman who is a literary darling. She's of Asian descent. We don't know for quite some time whether she's Japanese or Korean. It doesn't actually matter. She's an Asian brilliant author living in America. She's a literary darling. Everybody loves her, but she's quite cool, quite standoffish, has very, very few friends, and has written a couple of books which became immediate bestsellers. And her name is Athena. And she dies in a freak accident. And she just has this one friend, really, called June. What does June do? She steals Athena's unpublished manuscript that Athena hasn't even let her publisher look at, but is going to be her absolute chef d'oeuvre, her absolute work of all time. She steals the unpublished manuscript and she publishes it not under her own name, but under a rather ambiguous name of Juniper Song. And of course, Song sounds like an Asian name. So for a while, perhaps she's mistaken for an Asian author. In fact, she had hippie parents who called her Juniper Song and then her surname, because Song was like 60s, let flowers be in your hair, come to San Francisco kind of thing. Lots of dark humor in this book. Lots of digs and satire about publishers and author and publishing companies. But suddenly, June begins to be found out. And where the novel takes us is she, June, discovers exactly how far she will go to keep what she thinks she deserves. And of course, what happens next, as the novel says, is entirely everyone else's fault. It's satirical, it's funny, it'll make you think, it'll keep you engrossed in the pages. Wonderful for a book club, as is Ghost Theatre by Matt Osborne. It's called Yellow Face. You won't miss it in a bookshop because it's got a bright yellow cover with two Asian slanting eyes on the cover. That's all. It's a brilliant, brilliant cover. Yellow Face by Rebecca F. Quang. Such a pleasure to read. Well, such a pleasure to read fiction of any kind or non-fiction, but to read two such compelling fiction books has been remarkable. Well, that's all for this week. We've covered certainly a lot of ground. I've encouraged you to go to Madagascar. Remember, the world's fourth largest island. I wonder if you can remember what the other three were, and I'm not going to tell you again. But it's got 80% of the world's diversity on there. Let me put that slightly differently. 80% of the flora and fauna exists nowhere else on Earth. And if you only go to Madagascar for one reason, you go to see the lemurs, which are quite enchanting. We talk then to Marco Cristofoli, who is the CEO of Cruises International. He told us, I had no notion, that there's a Jewish cruise that starts from Haifa, where there's kosher food on board, that has a rabbi on board, but there are cruises for every pocket, for every kind of interest, for all kinds of people. So maybe think about cruising if you haven't already. And then finally, I talked to you about those remarkable two books, The Ghost Theatre and Yellow Face. So that's all for this week. Lots of love, lots of life. Take care, look after yourselves, and look after others too.